All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Happy birthday to the United States Army. We're only 241 years old this coming Wednesday, so we just wanted to say a happy birthday to the U.S. Army. Many of us affiliated with Veterans Radio are Army veterans, and so that's about as much as I can say about that. Welcome to Veterans Radio. We're really excited to have you here on our program on this beautiful Sunday afternoon in Michigan. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I get to be the host today, and I'm honored to be able to talk to our guests. We've got a number of great things coming up that we're going to be talking about. First up is going to be Dr. James Mead, who is a PhD in psychology. He was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam, and he had a traumatic brain injury like you won't believe. You've got to stay tuned to listen to this story, and he's going to talk about his recovery from his TBI. And later on in the hour, we are going to be talking with Justin Constantine, and Justin is a Marine veteran from the Iraq conflict, and he was shot in the head. And we're going to talk about his recovery and what he has been doing since that time. And again, it's another great inspirational story. So both of these are going to be great, and we want you to do that. The other thing I want you to remind you of, and if we have time, we'll get into it later on, is that Flag Day is coming up this coming Wednesday. And I've already been told I have to clean up my act on this one. But Wednesday, fly your flag. If you don't have a flag, go get a flag and put it out there. On Wednesday, June 14th, is Flag Day. No excuses, folks. We're going to come around. The flag police are going to be out there to make sure that you've got your flag out there. So that's that. Coming up this week, though, on not on Veterans Radio, but in the local area in Dexter, there's a military resource fair coming up next Saturday, June 18th, from 1 to 4 p.m., and joining me on the line right now is one of the coordinators of this program, and that is Gene Clark. Gene, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. I'm happy to be on it. Good to be talking with you, too.
It is good to be talking to you also. So tell me about this resource fair that's coming up a week from yesterday, next Saturday, June 18th.
Right, and it's going to be a fun day for families, as well as a resource fair for service members and their families. And all area U.S. military service members and their families, along with veterans and other interested community leaders or community members, are cordially invited to attend. And this is the first resource fair we have had, so we're kind of excited about it, but we hope to do more of these if we do a good job with this one.
Well, I'm sure that you're going to do a good job on this one. So is this being sponsored by the Dexter United Methodist Church?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is. And we have a special veterans and soldiers advisory group that kind of works a lot of the projects that we do.
Oh, that's neat.
Yes, we've invited many veterans-related and service-related agencies and organizations. And they'll be there to answer questions and provide guidance and direction on a wide range of topics, including mental health issues. There will be activities and games for children, including face painting and clowns, refreshments, raffle drawings, and prizes. And I'll say more unless you want to say something.
No, I was just going to say, in reading your public relations release, your press release, is it that, you know, many of the more historical veterans organizations haven't been able to pick up the Iraq-Afghanistan veterans yet. And
that's right.
So I know that this is one of the reasons that you felt motivated to do this.
Right. We feel that a lot of people come home from the war and their friends from the war or from their service, they're very close with those people, but they may live states away and they don't get together after they've been so close like brothers. And so sometimes people come home and they're lonely and lost because they don't feel those bonds anymore and they don't join any other organization that understands them. So we're just trying to address that and see if we can help have them more so they are able to have more connections with people that think and have been through what they've been through. Now, part of what we're going to do on Saturday is one of the agencies coming is Homefront Hugs USA, and this is Alyssa Kellerman from Ann Arbor. And this group, and there's many volunteers that work with her, they're going to have information on how to support our troops by adopting a soldier or a family. And children and adults will be able to create special cards and messages to sick or injured veterans or deployed troops. And children who bring special things like beef jerky, gum, a frisbee, a yo-yo, or a protein bar will receive a special prize. And these items will be used for care packages for our troops. There's also opportunities for teens to take part in that as well.
I think this is a great idea, because not only are you out there trying to help the veterans coming home, but you're also, I think it sounds like, trying to inform the civilian population of what some of these men and women have been going through and how they can help.
Right. And we're trying to help them understand and educate them. I think the more you read about it, the more alarmed you are, because I think there's last year it was there's a suicide rate of a service member who has come home 17 a day, and I think it's gone up now to 19 a day throughout the country. Suicides by those who have served us by being in the wars, and it's devastating to the families. And also, when people come home, because they don't fit in, it's a lot of stress on the family and stress, you know, financial stress, emotional stress, just all kinds of stress. And we're just trying to do what we can to help. We're not sure we can, but I think if we all do a little something, it should make a difference.
Well, I think just making veterans aware that you care is something that is really important. And I know that previous wars, some of the veterans coming home didn't have the feeling anybody cared. And I think what you and the rest of the American population is doing for this generation of veterans is very selfless and is just a fantastic thing that you are doing out there on Saturday, June 18th, from 1 to 4. And anything else that you want to say? If anybody has any questions, where do they go?
Well, they can call me directly, 734-426-8598, or they can call the church office, 734-426-8480. And I wanted to tell you one more thing. One of the groups that's coming, I don't know how much time you have, but we're going to have maybe 15 groups there, 211 United Way, Homefront Hugs, VA Hospital, Red, White, and Blue, Jewish Family Services, Samaritan Counseling and Give an Hour, Vietnam Veterans of Michigan, Veterans History Project, the Buddy-to-Buddy Program. Let's see. What else was I going to tell you?
Hope Clinic. We got the Hope Clinic in there. The Salvation Army, the Red Cross, and much, much more.
Right. And one of the groups, Samaritan Counseling and Give an Hour, Julie Boyd, the other organizer for this event, is a registered counselor. I think she's probably an MWS, or I'm not sure what her degree
MSW.
Is in. But she counsels people that have mental health issues and other issues. And she is a member of Give an Hour and Samaritan Counseling. And Give an Hour and Military One Source are organizations that provide, encourage counselors to give free service to military service persons that need to have somebody to talk to. So you can get free sessions. You just have to, counsel or talk to them, and they'll find you a counselor that has volunteered to do this, and Julie does this.
Right. Yeah, we have talked to that organization here on Veterans Radio, and it's a great opportunity. And as we're going to be talking with our two guests later on, both of them say, you have to make the first step, though. The veteran has to make the first step. But we're making sure that you are aware of all of these different services that are available to you, and you just have to kind of get the courage to ask for the help. And I think this is what's so important. Gene, I think this is a great activity, and I hope I can get out there myself. And we're looking forward to it. Again, this is on Saturday, June 18th, at the Dexter United Methodist Church out on Huron River Drive. 1 to 4 p.m. Be there.
Yes, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Jean, very much for being on Veterans Radio and for helping us promote your activities here. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. All right, we're going to take a quick break here and pay a couple of bills. And when we come back, we're going to have our first guest who's going to be on is Dr. James Mead. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We're back on Veterans Radio, and that is a local singer, and her name is Kelly Trudell, and that's a great little song that she has put together for helicopter pilots. And so, without further ado, I'm going to bring on another helicopter pilot, and let me just give you a little background here. Dr. James Mead, Jr. Was a warrant officer in Vietnam, 1967, and he was shot down for the third time in a few months. In May of 1967, and what's kind of interesting about this crash, and I hate to say that I've been there, I didn't do this type of crash. Mine was not quite as dramatic, but as they hit the ground, the rotor came off, main rotor came off, and it went through the cockpit and hit James in the head and rattled his brain like never before, and in fact, he has no memory whatsoever of anything prior to that moment, actually 10 weeks later, too. So we're going to talk about with James Mead, and we're going to talk about what happened after that day. So, James, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Dale, thank you very, very much. It's great talking to you.
It is great to have you on the program, and I, you know, we can't do justice to what actually happened to you, and I think everybody can utilize, you know, their imagination to have a rotor blade come through the cockpit and hit your head, and not only did you hit your head in the front, but it forced your head back against the back of our seats, which was armored.
Right.
And then your brain inside your head was going back and forth sort of like a ping pong ball.
Mm-hmm. That seems to be the case.
I think so. So let's go forward from there. And, oh, let me tell my audience. I had a chance to talk with Dr. Mead or James prior to coming on the air, and I said, do I call you Jim or do I call you James? And he says, well, Jimmy lost his memory in May of 1967, and so we've just kind of shifted, and we're going to James now. So, because there's two lives for you, and one is that you don't remember, and the other one is what you obviously have made of your life. So let's go from there. You spent 10 weeks in the hospital.
I spent 10 weeks unconscious.
That's true.
I spent 3 years in the hospital.
Wow. All right. So tell me what happened. Let's go through this because we're going to be talking about traumatic brain injury here, folks. And if you do have any questions and you want to ask Dr. Mead a question, you can give us a call here on Veterans Radio. The number is 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. All right. So we're in a coma for 10 weeks. What?
I was unconscious for 2 weeks from the time I got wounded until I got to the United States, because they flew me from place to place to get back to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And then I spent the rest of the time in the hospital.
And what happened when you finally woke up?
Okay. When I woke up, I knew nothing. I mean, this might sound so, so weird, but I've heard it from other people that have been through this. I mean, I didn't hear from them, but I heard it about people. And I didn't know anything. I mean, I didn't know that I was a human being. I didn't understand what was around me. I didn't understand anything about communication with people. I didn't understand that I could. I couldn't speak English anymore. I couldn't understand. Couldn't feed myself, couldn't walk, couldn't, whatever you name it, I couldn't do it.
This is just too much for my limited brain power to understand, is that everything can be knocked out of your brain.
Well, I don't know what knock out of my brain means, but it's just that my brain was so shaken up so bad, and that my neurons no longer fit, I suppose. And if you had a chance to read the Reader's Digest, you would also know that my brain just didn't work. And it was like I died and was reborn, according to the doctor. And the Reader's Digest mentions that. I learned how to be a human all over again. And it took a few years. But I've been blessed. I mean, I have my PhD now, but I worked my tail off to get to school, to learn how to read and write again and stuff like that.
Well, you as you mentioned in your book, and I need to do a little promo here, folks, Making Your Own Reality is Dr. Mead's book, and it talks about his recovery and what he had to do, and then also about his life now treating TBI and other mental problems that people do have. Can we go back to when you woke up and your family was there? And these are the people, based on what I read in the book, that's literally saved your life.
Right, my family and my ward mates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's an interesting thing. I'd like to point that out. When you were in the hospital, you weren't in the hospital where people had mental problems. You were in a ward where. Can you describe your ward mates?
I was in the amputee ward.
Okay.
And.
Why did they put you in there, do you think?
Because they put me in the amputee ward because the doctor felt these men had more spirit and more guts than anybody else in the hospital. And they wanted to live. And they wanted me to want to live. So when I was still unconscious, I was put in the amputee ward. And they watched me all day long and every day. And they wanted me to, as soon as I regained consciousness, they called a nurse. I had no idea what they were saying or what they were doing or where I was or anything. But that was the beginning of my new life.
Well, and they had to, as you said, you were in a body cast.
Right.
I didn't set the picture correctly. okay, this guy is in a body cast. He doesn't know anything because he doesn't remember anything. So he doesn't know what he is, where he is, and why he is.
Right.
And the other thing is that you can't see. You can see people around, but some of them are amputees. You know, they're losing an arm. They've lost a leg, one leg, two legs. And you're trying to figure out if you have any legs. But you can't see because you're in this cast.
This is interesting because I was laying on my back in a full body cast. I couldn't see left, right, down, or up. I could just see straight up in the air. And I could, when the amputees, when they would come by me, they just get out of the wheelchair and jump up on the bed with me, where I was. Just jump up there. So I never knew the people had legs because they didn't have legs. And it was completely new to me that it wasn't even new to me. I just never knew it. I never knew that people had legs.
So what happened when they took the body cast off? What
I
were these things,
legs.
Right?
That was when I found out I had legs. And but the guys let me know that you do have legs, but it was all completely new to me. I mean, as far as walking was concerned, I didn't know what to do. Like, okay, one thing about my walking, okay, I can't feel my left leg. It's numb. Okay. And so when I was trying to learn how to walk, I'd stick my left leg, I'd stick my right leg out, and wouldn't know what to do with my left leg, so I just fall on my face.
Ooh.
And this went on for over a year. But then finally, I coordinated it somehow. Now it's interesting. I my leg is still numb, but I'm alive.
Well, that's the amazing part to me. We're talking with Dr. James P. Meade, Jr., former warrant officer, former helicopter pilot in a former life, I guess that's the way I'd put it, who was knocked silly, for lack of a better definition, whose head was just bashed back and forth, and had to come out and start all over again. And this is where I think is what's so interesting about how your family's interaction with you. Your dad was a regular Army, career Army, correct?
Career Sergeant Major.
Big Sergeant Major. One of those guys.
One of the biggest.
Yeah, the people that everybody was afraid of. So you were all over the world as a kid. Mm-hmm. You had a brother and a sister, I believe?
Well, I had three brothers.
Three brothers.
And one sister.
And you lost one brother in Vietnam.
One brother died in Vietnam. And another brother died about 3 years ago.
Oh.
5 years ago.
I'm sorry to hear that one, too. But while you're recovering, your dad had this kind of a philosophy. Could you describe that to our audience about how you get things done?
Well, I'm not sure which one you're talking about, but
I didn't get a chance to set this up either. The one I'm talking about is that if you want to do something,
you do it.
Right,
Strange. If you want to do something, you do it, and. If you don't know you ever did it, it's not a lot of pain. Because to me, I never knew that I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
I just talked to my dad, of course, and with him, and my ward mates, especially, all day long, every day, on how to do things. I didn't always do the best job in the world. And it took me a fair amount of time, but it wasn't okay. When somebody said, "Gosh, wasn't it hard?"
We didn't know.
Hard is when you remembered when you used to it and couldn't do it anymore. But I couldn't remember doing it. Period. So I was learning it for the first time.
I want to remind our audience that I found out while reading his book. Again, the book is called "Making Your Own Reality." Is that not only was he a helicopter pilot in Vietnam, but he was also quite the student in college. He was also quite the athlete, traveling around the world with his father, playing baseball and other different sports. And again, it's very hard for all of us to imagine what would happen if we just forgot everything from the moment we were 19 back. And so this is what I find that is most incredible to me about your story, James.
You know, one thing I think is what you're talking about is I was the president of the University of Oregon chapter of Phi Eta Sigma, which is the Freshman Scholastic National Honor Society. And I was chosen the president of the University of Oregon chapter. So I gather I was fairly smart.
Yes, fairly. I think you were probably pretty smart.
I laugh because, you know, it seems so strange to me that I woke up with real problems. Mm-hmm. My IQ was not high enough for me to even stay in the Army.
I found that one really interesting. When obviously you were 100% disabled,
right?
And then they gave you a medical discharge because they felt that you were not smart enough to stay in the Army.
Well, I couldn't walk either.
That would be one of their concerns.
That's kind of a good reason, I guess. As a matter of fact, I put in a petition to stay in the Army. Even because I wanted to do it. I couldn't believe that I was that messed up because I couldn't see what I was like before. And I never went walking down, or never went through a city or anything like that. So I didn't really know that there were a lot of people in good shape.
Well, when you're in a ward where everybody else, you know, everybody's got some sort of physical problem and so forth, I guess you felt that that's where you belong. We have to take a break, so James, I'm going to ask you to hold on. We're going to go to the news, and then we're going to come back and talk more about how you went back to school and everything along those lines. All righty?
Oh, good. Sounds good.
Okay. So we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Veterans Radio. Don't go away. You can't miss this story. It's just too much. Too much. I think it's going to be most inspirational. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Choppers in the air, and dust is everywhere. This is just another day in the now. Cannons fire.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and that song was from sent in to us by Jack Murphy, who was an infantryman in Vietnam back in 1966-67. Keep those songs coming in. I love putting them on, and we're trying to put together a place on our website where we can gather up all of the music that you folks are sending us, and so you can go in there and listen to us. You can listen to Veterans Radio. I'm hoping that you are listening to it live, either through the studios at WAAM in Ann Arbor or on the internet through their website or through veteransradio.net's website. You can also go to our website to listen to all of our older programs. You got to remember, Veterans Radio has been on the air now for 13 years. Hard to believe, right? 13 years. We've got about 600 programs in our archives, and we're trying to get them up as fast as we can. You can also go to Veterans Radio and listen to our podcasts. So, and we're on Facebook, and we're on Twitter, and Nina, are we on anything else? I don't know what the other ones all are out there. But if you can't find us, you're not looking. And I think that's one of the things that we want to make sure that we're doing here today on Veterans Radio. So we are talking with Dr. James P. Meade, Jr., and I'm looking back at the book, and you were talking about after you started making your recovery and tried, you know, learning all of the things about moving physically, now you're also trying to figure out how to comprehend things mentally. Could you tell us a little bit about what you felt at the beginning as you were regaining your personality?
Well, I'd like to say one thing first.
Okay.
Before I get into that. You know, I was just listening to the news about those people that were killed in Florida.
Right.
You know, I have been terribly, terribly wounded. And I can't, you know, smell, I can't taste, my left leg is numb, I can't drive. I can't cry, and can't taste, whatever. Well, the whole nine yards, I can't do it. but I just want you to know that I know that nothing's happened to me as serious as what happened to those people last night.
Oh, right.
And I pray for them.
I feel exactly the same way. You know, so many of the people that we have talked to on Veterans Radio that have gone through things that have happened to them, similar to yours, you know, they say, but I'm here,
right?
You know, and I'm not, you know, I'm not dead, I'm not gone, I'm not in some graveyard somewhere, or I'm not missing. And, you know, it is something to be grateful for, and it's something that we all have to really think about when we hear about these incidents that occur around the country or around the world. And, you know, take a second and think about the people that were killed. I'm going to pause here for a second. Let's go back 45 years and see how we put James Meade back together again.
Well, you know, a lot of it was James Meade fell back together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do a lot of things that were stupid.
You use the word crazy. You use the word idiot a lot in your book.
Because I didn't know anything, and but you learn things by accident. You know, one thing works, and you keep trying it, and you keep trying it, and you keep trying it, and sooner or later it works better than ever. You know, it's pretty much, if you don't know how to do it, you either learn or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been blessed. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. But
well, somebody or something is watching over you. That's for sure. And they're not done yet.
Well, I hope not.
It sounds like. And what I'm curious about is, how did you ever get to the point of being able to go back to college?
Okay, this is interesting. My father kept saying over and over and over again, because he was just, I mean, I was just so tore up that he was just nowhere else. And part of it was, James, you once had such a beautiful brain. You said, well, you know, it's over and over and over again. And I realized that I couldn't even read. I couldn't even write. And so I asked the VA, believe it or not, the VA, to send me back to college. Because I already finished a year and a half. And they had to let me come because I was a straight-A student, almost a straight-A student, before I went in the Army.
Right,
they had to take me.
Did you go back to you didn't go straight back to University of Oregon, did you?
No, I went to Mount Hood Community College.
Oh, I love community college. I work in a community college, and that's what we're there for, to help out.
Right.
To get you through. So, but you had an instructor, if I'm not mistakenly, it just said, there's no way you can do this.
What?
I said, you had one of your instructors or somebody at the school said, how are you going to do this?
I said I was going to do it because I was going to do it.
That's the only way your mind works. Now, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. That's great.
Because I didn't know any difference.
That's.
I mean, you don't. If you don't remember failing,
right?
How can you worry about failing? I didn't learn that fast, but it happened.
Well, you said you didn't. You don't remember anything from that first psychology class you took.
Well, you know,
I had some trouble with it.
Here's something is strange. I could memorize things. I had no idea what it said. I had no idea what it meant, but I could memorize things. And so when they had, I couldn't write.
Mm-hmm.
So use my hands. So I had. So the professor would help me, and I would give him answers that made sense, because they were the words that were in the book.
Right.
And I didn't have to know what I was talking about. I just knew that this is what I said. I am super, super blessed. I don't understand it myself.
All right, so you went back to the community college, and from there you went to, where did you go from there?
Well, from there I went to Portland State, and I finished my bachelor's degree.
Your bachelor's degree is in psychology, is that right?
Right.
Why did you choose that field?
Well, this might sound weird. Okay, the lady that was my psychologist at the VA hospital, she was so fantastic. She was so great that I made a decision that I want to be a psychologist like her. I had no idea what psychologists do. I just knew how she was treating me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew I had to, you know, my books and stuff like that, but I didn't really understand it until after I got my bachelor's. And And then later I got my master's. Well, actually,
the VA, was it the VA that sent you down
VA.
To California?
Right. And
this is a VA that many people are not familiar with. I take that back. I have to take that back a little bit because we're very pleased and we're very fortunate with the VA that we have locally. Mm-hmm. And you're obviously lucky that you had a VA that was looking out for you.
Well, the Portland VA is really fantastic. And every single veteran up here that I've ever talked to talks about how fantastic the Portland VA is. I mean, it's the counselors. Mm-hmm. Really had their minds on doing what was right. And for some reason, I convinced the counselor that I would be able to do it. So I started, my first year was just, as they call it, egghead class, mm-hmm. learning to read and write and stuff like that. And I didn't get into any classes where you really have to know anything besides egghead stuff, quote again. Until my second year, or your second year and a half. But
you started, but you also, once you got past the egghead part, you started volunteering your time, didn't you? Working with other TBI
right,
victims
right.
and other people that were suffering from post-traumatic stress.
Exactly. Well, actually, I was convinced that that's what I should do. I didn't really know that I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started talking to people, started contacting me, parents usually, and wives, and sometimes even the person with a brain injury, and they wanted me to help them put together their lives. A lot of times they wanted me to cure them, and I say, hey, I don't cure anybody. I can't cure anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll help you, and I feel blessed that I was able to do what I have done, and I've done the same thing all my life. I've worked with people that have brain injuries and their families, and this is not only in the United States, but in Europe, in Asia, in Mexico. I love what I do.
Well, Dr. Mead, I'm going to be very formal here. We're talking with James Mead, who is the author of the book Making Your Own Reality. And this is what I wanted to talk to for the next. We've only got about 5 or so minutes left. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get into this about how you help your patients succeed. And help themselves over some of the barriers that they've set up for themselves. Can you talk about that just briefly?
Okay, and this part might be fairly brief because each patient is different. Each mm-hmm. one is different. But you help them image what they're trying to do. You help them see what they want to do, and they just do this over and over and over again. We talk about it, you know, and then we find out, you know, and I'll just be blank. See, well, why didn't you do it? What caused you to fail?
Mm-hmm.
What caused the mistake? And they're thinking, make a mistake. I get some excuse, and then they realize that hey, they're on the right track. Something they never once thought that was possible. And they're on the right track, and they keep working, working, and working, and they start getting better and better and better. I've seen people not perform miracles, but pretty darn close, as far as I'm concerned. Good people that can do things they never thought they could.
I think the idea of just some people just realizing that they can actually live, they can live again, and that whatever their particular issue happens to be, physical, mental, whatever it is, isn't going to paralyze them for the rest of their lives.
Remember, I couldn't remember ever being able to do things.
Right.
So for me, it was just doing something and not knowing what I was doing. But the things that just all began to fit together. And so, unimaginable in most people, but it works.
It does. It's almost like, I don't know, I guess I would use the terminology visualization.
Right.
Where you visualize yourself succeeding, or you visualize yourself hitting the winning basket or hitting the home run, or in many cases you visualize yourself in your field probably of just being able to walk across the room without falling. And the idea of this imagery that you're putting into your mind of how you're going to accomplish these things. That's what I found so interesting when I was reading the book is that, and I know I'm misquoting your dad and probably you too, but the idea is that if you want to do something, you have to do whatever it takes to do that.
Exactly.
And so if you need to walk, as you pointed out, with no feeling in your left leg, and you have an interesting little story in there of trying to catch a tennis ball that didn't work out well. And, you know, again, thinking about, oh, I can do this, but then I don't know how to do it. And, you know, the consequences thereof. And I'm hoping that you're better at at least stopping the tennis ball nowadays.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, right.
Seriously, about that, I had a friend, a couple friends who were playing tennis and in the hospital. And I asked if I could try. I had my
crutches? Were you on crutches?
Crutches.
Okay.
And I had one crutch, and then I had other arm I used for a racket. And so my friend on the other side, he hit it to me, and I thought, oh my God, it's coming at me. And I swung, and missed it by 1,000 miles, and fell flat on my face, I was so broken up that I just went around the court to another building and started pounding my head against the wall.
I can only imagine how frustrating it must be. I was the image that went through my mind when I read that in the book was of a brand new walking child. And, you know, sometimes when they start to fall, they don't put their hands out because they don't know that they're supposed to put their hands out.
Right.
And I'm thinking that that's probably what happened to you. You didn't know, hey, I have to break this fall somehow. What do I do? And because all the neurons and nerves and everything in your brain weren't reattached quite right yet, or reborn, or whatever it happens in there, that would be the result of it.
Well, it's kind of like slowing yourself down by putting your head there first.
Yeah. this won't hurt much. Think of all of those things that we've done in our lifetimes where we do those things. You also mentioned that you had some relearning your social skills because, as you pointed out, your hands don't work quite the way that you want them to sometimes. And so it sounded as though when you were trying to learn how to eat that didn't go well either.
Well, it's...
Well, the food got in there, but not necessarily the way that you wanted it to.
Well, okay. It's like utensils were pretty much out. So even in the hospital, I had to eat with my hands. And so whatever it was, spaghetti, whatever thing, it was in my face. And I didn't with a spoon, I didn't know how to get it in my face, in my mouth. Mm. I'd try and I'd flip it all over the place. But you know, I look back now and I think, my God, I must have been weird. But I don't know how, but things have changed over and over and over the years.
You have learned.
I'm really blessed.
I think you are too, but I think a lot of that's of your own making, and I think that was ingrained in you. I think from your family, and from your faith in God, and the other, just the people that have been around you for these last 45 years, have done so much. We've got about a minute to go, and I just wanted to ask you what you would like to tell our audience about how do you survive these things? You know, what is your,
you know, one of the most important things to know is that you don't have to fail. You can pass. You can make it if you try until you make it. And it gets frustrating, but if you try, you can do it. And I don't want to say, I don't want people to think that, oh, he says that I can do it every time. No, you won't. You won't. And it'll take a while. You'll be able to accomplish things you never, ever thought you could.
Well, I strongly recommend your book and to our audience, and also that it's such a story of survival. And I think that's what's important. We have had the privilege of talking to men and women like yourself who have been through traumatic injuries and have been able to pull themselves out on the other side and make a life. And some have done very successful, and obviously you have too. And so I want to thank you very much for being on our program. And I want to, have you been up in a helicopter since?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Not flying. I got other friends that were helicopter pilots gave me rides up in helicopters.
It's still an adventure. That's the way I look at it.
I'll believe it or not, I sometimes wonder.
How did we do those things?
This time, I do have some caution.
Well, understandably so. But you were an amazing young man prior to your accident, and you certainly are an amazing person today. And I want to thank you for being on our program, and I look forward to talking to you in the future. And I'd suggest everybody go out and take a look at his book. It's entitled Making Your Own Reality, a Survival Story, and you certainly are a survivor, Dr. Mead. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Hey, and it's been great talking to you, and I hope your every day is a real blessing.
Thank you. It is. I'm very fortunate, too.
Great.
We'll be talking to you again.
Au revoir. All
right. Thank you. All right. We're going to take a real quick break, and then we'll be back, and we're going to talk a little bit about Flag Day. And because that's coming up. And to me and those all of us here at Veterans Radio, Flag Day is really important. So stay tuned. Wasn't quite what I was expecting, but that's all right. We'll take it there. I can't do my Jimmy Cagney imitation of singing "You're a Grand Old Flags," so we'll just kind of continue on with that. I wanted to talk a little bit about flag etiquette. You know, we get these questions all the time. What am I going to do with a flag if it's old and tattered and torn? And when do I salute? When don't I salute? And so on and so forth. So according to the website, usflag.org, and their page on flag etiquette, number one, the American flag is never dipped to any person or thing. That means it never, you know, like people will dip a flag. It is only flown upside down. It's a distress signal. So don't mess around with that. The flag should never be used as drapery or for covering speakers' desks or a platform or any decoration in general. The flag should never be used for any advertising purpose. So many of those people that write their messages across the flag, you're not supposed to do that. Let's see, the flag should never have been placed on any drawing of any kind. And the flag should never be used as a receptacle for receiving, holding, or carrying, or using it as a bundle. So don't do that. If you are, when the flag is being, during the national anthem, when you're saluting the flag, all persons present in uniform should render the military salute. And this is rather new. It says members of the armed forces and veterans who are present but not in uniform may also render the military salute. All other persons should face the flag, stand at attention with their right hand over their heart, remove their headdress with their right hand and hold it on their left shoulder, being on the heart. So you're supposed to take your hats off, folks. Men and women, take off your hat when you're saluting the flag. Thank you very much. Displaying the flag from sunrise to sunset, if you leave your flag all night, it should be illuminated so that that's there. When placed on a single step, the U.S. flag is higher than all other flags. When flags are displayed in a row, the U.S. flag goes to the observer's left. Flags of other nations can be flown at the same height, and they go off to the right. When used in a marching ceremony, the flag is also on the left. Special days, the flag should be flown at half staff. On Memorial Day, it is flown at half staff until noon, and then it is raised up again. This is important to remember that. When flown at half staff, that means lowering the flag halfway between the top and the bottom. And only the general, the governor of a state, or the president is the one that's supposed to tell us whether we can put a flag at half staff. Let's see. When the flag is displayed on a car, the staff should be fixed firmly to the chassis or clamped to the right fender. When the flag is used to cover a casket, it should be placed so that the Union is at the head and over the left shoulder of the person in the casket. The flag should not be lowered into the grave or allowed to touch the ground. Remember that, too. Fold the flag in a traditional triangle for storage. Never just wad it up. Don't dip the flag. Don't let the flag touch the ground. Don't fly it upside down unless there's an emergency. Don't use your flag as clothing. I'm sorry, Nina. Don't store the flag where it can get dirty. Don't use it as a cover. Don't tie it back. Don't draw on or otherwise mark the flag. Don't use the flag for decoration. Wednesday, June 14th, is Flag Day. I want you all to go out and get your flag and put it out in front of your house. I'm going to drive through your neighborhood and find out if you're there. So please do that. And until the next week, I guess we're running out of time. This is Veterans Radio, and we'll see you. Bob Gould will be the host next week, and we'll be back. Until then, you are dismissed.
Red, white, and blue, I am for you. Honest, you're a grand old flag. You're a grand old flag. You're a high-flying flag, and forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a ghost or brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on that grand old